Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
This is such an exciting time to be alive. The fact that human minds are eternal is about to break into the consciousness of the whole world. And you and I have ringside seats. In fact, you and I are right in the ring. You and I are helping to make that happen. This is so exciting. Welcome to Seek Reality. This is Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is your host. We're going to talk today about a component of what we're discovering about the greater reality in which we live. We're going to talk about how the dead make their presence known to us and how we can better learn to communicate with them. This is a whole area that I thought most people knew about. Shows how silly you can be when you're steeped in some knowledge. When I was a child, I had an unusual experience. I won't recount it here. I've recounted it many times. But that experience made me curious. So what I did was to spend quite literally the past 50 years trying to figure out what had happened, where that voice had come from, what really is going on. What I discovered is that there is a lot of evidence, and I will be talking about that on a later podcast, where some of this evidence comes from and how we can be sure it's real. But there's a lot of evidence about what actually happens at death and what where we go after death. But even more importantly, we're discovering now that that evidence leads us to understanding a much greater reality than we ever dreamed existed. The universe, which we think is kind of big, the universe is a small part of the greater reality that actually exists. And what's strange about your position and mine, certainly mine now, yours as you come to understand this more, what's strange about our position is that we're kind of between mainstream science and mainstream Christianity and religions in general. Both of them talk about what happens at death and after death, especially science has a pretty good understanding of this limited reality in which we think we live, but neither of them tells the whole story. So it's very odd, I have to tell you, to be in a position of saying, wait a minute, you know that child at the side of the road when the emperor goes by without clothes on in that fable because the emperor believes he's wearing magic clothes and in fact he's been fooled and he's actually naked? Well, you and I and others who are undertaking this voyage of discovery of what really is going on are like that child. We're having to watch our two great exemplars, great sources of authority, mainstream Christianity and mainstream science, parading before us, telling us that what they're wearing is the cloak of all truth. And we're standing on the sidelines saying, wait a minute, can't you see it? Can't anybody see the fact that they're both naked? There's so much more they're not talking about, they're not telling us. And by the time most people reach, their late 50s perhaps, even it's a sooner age, by the time we are older, we all have had some experience that makes us understand that there's a lot more going on they won't tell us about. We've seen a vision of a dead person. So we've seen it. We've seen that it's real. We know we're awake. We pinch ourselves. There he is, and I know he's real. Or we've had a near-death experience. We've had some experience that makes us understand there's a whole lot more going on here than either Christianity or science is telling us. So here's this odd position we're in. We're between them both, and they claim to have truth and authority. And the reason they don't is that they're both belief systems. It's important to understand that right at the start. How is it that we know something they don't know? We're looking at the truth without any pre-examined, pre-established beliefs. I don't assume anything, and neither do you. We just want the truth. But, of course, we know that mainstream religion, mainstream Christianity, is a belief system. They tell us that. We need faith in this or that. Okay, we accept that. That's their deal. We don't expect it of science, and science, unfortunately, is just as much a belief system as is Christianity. It's atheism. In fact, you can find that in print. Scientists are atheistic materialists. By definition, if you are a scientist and you want to investigate something that's outside atheistic materialism, good luck to you. You'll never find a job. That being the case, we have this extraordinary opportunity, you and I, to go into the valley full of evidence between Christianity and science and look at what's there. And what's there is beyond amazing and wonderful. So that's the position that we're in. That's why we call these podcasts Seek Reality. It's something we all should be doing, and yet it's something that our most trusted institutions are for the moment, avoiding. That won't go on much longer. I'll tell you toward the end of this podcast what is probably going to be happening within the next, I think, decade that will break it all wide open. But so we have a limited time here in which you and I can be the people who really investigate the truth. So with that background, let's talk today about one specific little area of this truth, which is how the dead communicate with us. For millennia, of course, people have been dying. It's the one thing we all, being born and dying are the two things, I guess you'd say, that we all do. All the other things are almost optional, including eating. Many people, surprisingly many, get fed by a feeding tube their whole lives. They're not really eating. I mean, this is universal. It's what happens when all of us reach to the age where we can no longer support life in our bodies. We leave them. Given how universal death is, isn't it extraordinary that until now most people don't have a clue what happens at death or after death? There's a reason why that's true, and let's just mention it as a backdrop so that you'll understand why it's hard for us even to figure out why it's so hard for the dead to communicate. We have two trusted institutions, science and religion. In the case of most people listening, that's going to be Christianity. We trust them to tell us the truth, and all of them, both of them, and all the exemplars inside science and Christianity have theories, which they give us, and they give us those theories as truth, when, in fact, unfortunately, both science and Christianity are belief systems. They have dogmas. Anything with dogmas is a belief system by definition. You've got to believe certain things, or you're off their playground. That's a problem. It's a problem not so much with Christianity, because they tell us this is about faith. You've got to have faith in this or faith in that. We've got dogmas. You know, you don't want to be here, go find another religion. That's okay. I guess we can understand and accept that. The problem is that for at least the past century, mainstream science in the Western world has been a belief system. That belief system is atheistic materialism. You can find these words in print, but not recently. They've become more sophisticated now. They don't talk about the fact that if you want to investigate anything that is going to lead to some conclusion about reality other than atheistic materialism, you won't be able to do it virtually ever in a university setting or with a supportive foundations. There are exceptions, and I'm going to have some of them on as podcast guests so you can understand some of the problems they're having in trying to do this research inside traditional science. But the problem is that because for more than 100 years, science has been a belief system, we can't really trust it anymore to be investigating the truth. So here you and I are. Let's make an analogy here. You all know the story of the Emperor's New Clothes. The Emperor is tricked by some charlatans into believing that this clothing is so elegant, and only people who are pure of heart or smart or whatever the criterion is can see the clothes. If you can't see them, you're just not worthy. Well, he can't see them. He figures he's not worthy, but he goes out there and he parades in his new clothes. And he parades, of course, stark, raving naked, because he was tricked. So here you and I are standing beside the road, and our two trusted sources of the truth, Christianity and science, are parading before us wearing nothing. But because they tell us they've got clothes on, we are afraid, all of us, up until recently, have been afraid to say, wait a minute, I had this strange experience, so I know that what you're telling me isn't exactly right. We don't say it. And now you and I are standing beside that road, and we're saying, wait a minute, like that little child watching the emperor in his foolish clothes that aren't there. We're standing there saying, wait a minute, he's naked. They're both naked. Science and Christianity have run out of options in trying to find a way to give us a truth which is not based in investigating reality. That's why we call these podcasts Seek Reality. That's what we all should be doing. So we're doing that now. Just please understand as a background that there is, for everything that we say here, that I say or that my guests say, there is evidence to back it up. I don't believe that any of us should be using just our speculations, just our things we intuit. I'm not a psychic. In fact, I deliberately refuse to receive any information telepathically. I won't. I want the truth because I want to be able to lay out to you what that truth is, and here's the evidence, and you can check it yourself. I've written two books on this subject, The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch. Both of them have an appendix of some 70 books, which are written by people who have done investigation in all the many areas that this big study touches. And if you are interested in a specific area of more information, you can read those books. I've annotated the bibliography so that you can see what worked, what didn't work, what makes sense, what maybe you can gloss over. You can use, to begin your own study, you can use that bibliography as a start. So with that background, let's begin to talk today about why it is so hard for the dead to communicate with us. If they're right here, and the evidence tells us that there are about 6 layers of inhabited reality beyond this one that exists in exactly the same place. Just to briefly recap what I think I've said elsewhere, right now your mind is like a TV set tuned to this level of reality. In fact, it's tuned to that body on this level of reality. And that's why you think you're in that body that you're sitting there in or driving a car in now. You're not in that body. Your mind is far away. But it's like Jake in his safely in his little pod with his blue avatar running around on the planet. I've forgotten the name of it. I don't know what it's called. Doesn't really matter. But he's running around on this planet and having experiences. Well, that's what your body is that you think you're in now. Your mind is safe, an eternal mind. Always has been, always will be. So with those two images in mind, the television set and the fact that you're really not in this body, it's easy to understand what happens at death, and it begins to be easy to understand why the dead have trouble communicating with us. When you die, all that happens is that your mind tunes to a higher channel, a higher level of reality, a higher vibratory rate, and it picks up at that new, just as if you turned a TV channel knob, it picks up a whole new reality in the same place where we are now, and it's just as solid. In fact, the dead tell us it's more real than the reality where we think we are now. It's all in the same place. Now, that fact, and it's a fact, it's overwhelmingly demonstrated in all the afterlife evidence we've been studying, and this goes back close to 200 years. That fact has a lot to tell us about our present reality and just how much it really is material in the first place. If atheistic materialism is the fundamental dogma of science, and if it turns out nothing really is material, you can understand why scientists are increasingly flummoxed by what they're discovering. It doesn't have anything to do with materialism, ultimately. But with that as a backdrop, let's look at the problem the dead would have in trying to communicate with us. Where they are is a whole new solid reality. Let's say they're on channel 4, and you and I are on channel 1. We think, by the way, that the material universe is the lowest vibratory rate, but there's no way to know that for sure. But assuming that it is, we're on channel 1. The dead are mostly on channel 4, 5, and 6, something like that. Why can't they communicate with us? Well, imagine you're watching the news, live newscast, and you're in channel 1 or 2, whatever, and you turn to a slightly higher channel, and you pick up another live newscast. Now ask yourself, How would those two newscasters communicate with one another, live, on air, and without a cell phone or any other electronic means of communication? The answer is, they can't. They can't because they're on two different vibratory levels. That's the problem the dead have in trying to communicate with us. And that's the problem, frankly, we have in trying to communicate with the dead. It's important to understand how this works, because then you can begin to understand how we have been getting around it for the past many thousands of years, and how we are going to, in the end, be able to surmount this problem and come up with what we will call a soul phone, a way to communicate directly with the dead. But it's going to be hard. Think about how hard it will be. Okay, so we understand what the problem is. The dead have had this problem, think about it, for thousands of years. This effort the dead are making every day to communicate with those they have just left seems to go back to the cave. It goes back to, for as long as there have been human minds, there have been human minds which died out of bodies, but were still perfectly alive and had to look at the fact that their loved ones were grieving. Think how much suffering there is for our dead when they're fine and they have no way to show us that they're fine. This is a problem for them. It's made worse by the fact that there's a kind of physics that operates. It's a spiritual physics, if you will. It's possible to go lower in your vibratory rate. You can tune, if you happen to be naturally spiritually on channel 4, you can tune down to channel 1 pretty easily, especially with help from other dead people. But you can't go higher. People who have tried to go higher in the afterlife than the spiritual level that they've attained tell us it's overwhelmingly difficult. It feels like you can't breathe. There's too much vibration in the air. It's just, you can't do it. So the dead can't go higher, but they can easily come lower. So assume, if you've had someone who has recently died, that person is in the room with you. It's just that they don't have a body anymore. You can't see them, but you can talk to them. And we recommend talking aloud to them. Say, Dad, if you're around, know that I love you. I forgive you for anything you might think I might not forgive you for. Everything is fine. I'm going to see you soon. Please go with my blessing, and you don't have to worry about me. That's the kindest thing you can possibly do for someone who has just died. Free them. Let them go where they're happy to go, because it's, frankly, between you and me, it's way more fun there than it is here. That's why I entitled my books with fun in great big letters on the front. It's fun. It's fun to be a completely dead person. It's not fun to be stuck in the middle, and we're going to be doing podcasts about how that happens and how to perhaps get out of it. But basically, they're happy. They don't grieve for us because they can come visit us anytime they like. They can tune into our thoughts. Maybe that's bad news for you. I was on a radio show once when I was answering questions, and a woman called in and said, can my husband know what I'm thinking? And I said, yeah. She said, oh, that's not good. So I thought, you know, maybe people don't realize that you should clean up your thoughts when you have a recently dead loved one, because, yeah, they can tune into our thoughts. The evidence suggests that's certainly true. But okay, here, let's go back to that poor person who was just killed by a mammoth and his body has been buried and there's grieving going on. What the heck does he do for his loved ones? Well, even back then, there were enthusiastic researchers. Now there are many more, and frankly, many of the names you would know. We'll talk about that in a minute. But back then, there were researchers figuring out what they were dealing with here. All right, well, we don't have bodies. What do we do? The dead have minds much more powerful than ours. We have eternal minds, too, that are powerful, but while we're in bodies, our bodies, the matter of our bodies, somehow our brains especially, I guess, limit our ability to use our whole eternal mind. So they had expanded in abilities with their minds. What could they do? What they learned to do was to produce objects. And more specifically, what they seem to do is to dematerialize an object in one place and time and rematerialize it in front of our nose. These are called apports, and they seem to be very common. Isn't that amazing? Think about it. But People who have seen apports arrive tell us that they appear in air and drop. Again, isn't that freakish? Think about what that means. Imagine seeing something appear right in front of you and it drops to the ground. They try not to freak us out. Therefore, they try to materialize them more subtly. But what they do is to give us things. The most common things that they give us nowadays are pennies. Some of the dead specialize in larger denomination coins. You wish more of them would give us silver dollars, but most of them give us pennies. I guess it's easy to find a penny somewhere and to dematerialize it there and rematerialize it here. And that's what they do. But pennies will often have, although not always, a date that may be significant, a birth date, a death date, a date of marriage, a date when a child was born, that kind of little extra fillip of a sign they give us when they give us pennies. Now, if you find one penny per month, that doesn't mean anything. But if you've just had someone recently die, and you start finding pennies in a lot of places, including, I know I just was looking at that table. There was nothing on that table. Now look, there's a penny. That's not a coincidence. That's an apport. Say thank you aloud and just pick up all the pennies you find. There have been reports from people who have found hundreds of pennies in the week or two after someone died. If that's your loved one's particular sign, then that will happen for you. Feathers also are a very common sign. And again, if you've got a feather pillow and you find a feather when you wake up in the morning, probably not a sign. But if you have whether you have a feather pillow or not, if you have a person who has recently died and you're suddenly finding feathers everywhere, then it's very likely that that is a sign. And just say thank you. Right after my mother died, I found a number of blue jay feathers. Now, blue jays aren't really common in Austin, I don't think. I've seen maybe two. But we had a pet blue jay when I was a child, and I think those were signs from my mother. I said thank you each time I found a feather. I think what it was back when it was a mastodon that killed someone, I think what they were doing was finding unusual pebbles. Probably little white pebbles or something, and suddenly the dead were finding a bunch of those. And they began to make the connection to the dead person, just as I'm hoping you will begin to make that connection now. The dead also learned way back then to give us other signs. They would make vegetation bloom out of season. You'd see a flower at a time of year when you shouldn't, or even a whole hillside of flowers that are out of season. They would make scents. This is a very common sign, a scent that reminds you of a dead loved one. The signs I've received that were scents were my grandmother's perfume. In the year after she died, I smelled it repeatedly. It was a sort of unusual lilacs and lilies of the valley kind of old lady scent. So it was unmistakable. When my brother-in-law died, the first time I entered the house where he had lived just before he died, I was overwhelmed by the smell of cigarette smoke, and then I never smelled it again. Now, he was never allowed. He was a very good husband and allowed to smoke in the house. Never smelled that scent before or since in that place, but overwhelmed by it just once. That kind of thing is a very good sign. Cooking smells. The scent of grease, if your husband was a mechanic of some sort or enjoyed working on his car, that kind of thing is a very typical sign. And as you're seeing, these are signs that the dead could have given us, you know, many hundreds of years ago in many cases. They're basic. And the scent, just to finish this talking about scent signs, they happen inside our minds so that you can be with other people and say, yeah, I just smelled grandma's cooking. Nobody else smelled it but you. One fellow told me that he and his wife had smelled her mother's cooking overwhelmingly, and they looked at one another and they said, why are we smelling that stew she used to make? And he said, I don't believe it. He told me that in the instant when he said, I don't believe it, he stopped smelling it. She continued to smell it. That's more evidence that it happens in our minds. It doesn't happen out in the air. So there are many other things they do, but they're all in this vein. Right after they leave us, If the dead have left people that they loved, it is very, very, very common. I think it may be universal, but of course nothing is universal in these cases. But it's very common for them to try to do a few things that are going to get our attention. Another thing that they often do is they will play with electricity in our vicinity. They will turn lights on and off. That's one of the most common, I think, signs. They will turn TVs on and off, and they might do it in ways that make you crazy. Just be prepared. Be prepared to say, stop messing with my favorite show, because if you have an active, recently dead loved one, that's one of the things they really enjoy doing. Are you getting a picture here? Are you coming to see that, in fact, there are ways around this problem of being at different vibratory levels? The key to it seems to be they're learning to lower their vibratory rate to ours, so they're in the same place. They then use their very, very much more powerful minds to manipulate our reality. They can manipulate it. The hints are that especially those who are more advanced spiritually can manipulate our reality in major ways. It's probable that there are some of the dead who are powerful enough in their minds to be able to materialize very much bigger things in front of us than a penny or a silver dollar. Please, let's send more of those. The evidence is strong that they can do dramatic things. As people who listen to this podcast know, I quote Jesus not as a religious figure at all, but as someone who 2,000 years ago told us things that we're only now coming to understand are true. And I think that that correspondence between what Jesus says in the Gospels and what we're only now learning now is one of the most amazing things that's ever been discovered, certainly by me, but I think by most people, is this amazing correspondence between what someone who walked the earth 2,000 years ago said and what we're only now learning. So when I quote Jesus, I'm never quoting him as a religious figure. I'm quoting him as, isn't it amazing we've got words preserved that confirm what we're learning now. But he said, if you have as much faith as a grain of mustard seed, little tiny seed, if you have that little bit of certainty about your ability to do something, you'll be able to say to this mountain, throw yourself into the sea and a mountain will obey you. Well, we're learning he's right. If our minds are so powerful as that, we can manipulate reality very well. So there are rare reports of very much more surprising things that the dead have done, which usually don't make the press because they're extraordinary. But I would not be surprised as we become more open to this kind of information to hear about much bigger manipulations of our reality, of matter, than we ever even dream of now. So their minds are very, very powerful. And once they have let us know that they're alive and we've acknowledged that they're alive, don't be surprised if your dead loved ones don't stop doing it. I mean, they'll stop. Usually after a year or two, they'll stop, even if they're doing it pretty well. Not all of them. Some of them will continue even for the rest of our lives to do little things like leave us feathers or pennies forever. But most of them will stop within a year or two. It isn't that they've done anything negative or that there's anything unhappy. There's no explanation that's anything but joyous of that fact that they're no longer leaving us things or manipulating our electricity. There's so much for them to do where they are, and they're eager to do it. So once they've reassured us that they're okay, just say, okay, go, I'll see you soon. Just go on and enjoy your life there. Where they are, there's no time. So it was going to seem to them as if no time has passed, when maybe 50 years have passed, and there you'll show up, and it'll be the biggest hug you ever had in your life. But it'll seem to them as if it was no time at all. So that's a little bit on what the dead do. I guess one more thing I should mention is materializations and visions, because this is another big thing that the dead will do close after they have died. It's very, very, very common to see a vision of a dead person. If it happens to you, you're not losing your mind. This is common. It's the reports are that more than half of, I used to think it was almost half, I'm told now that the studies indicate more than half of widows and widowers will see a vision of someone who has just died, of their spouse, within the first year after the death. That's a pretty high percentage. It seems to be something that they need help to do because it's not easy, but they can make themselves appear to you in such a way that you are certain you're seeing a materialized person in front of you, a vision that is often looks very solid. They always look happy. Often they look younger than they have looked, you know, maybe for decades, because we all look young in the afterlife levels. But it's a wonderful experience. They usually don't talk, and it usually doesn't last very long. And surprisingly, there's usually no feet or legs. It's usually torso high, sometimes only bust high. But don't be afraid. Usually it's not fearful. Fear is a natural response, but we seem to have a narcotic kind of thing that happens in our minds when we have a visitation like that it doesn't scare us, especially if you're seeing someone you thought you would never see again, and there he is, and he looks great. What a great gift that is. So, all right, these are some of the things that the dead do to let us know that they're fine. You may not think that's enough. You may think, I want to be able to talk to him. I want to be able to be where he is. Well, I'm a skeptic when it comes to psychic mediums. The reason I'm a skeptic, I now understand, comes from the fact that when I was doing my study of psychic mediums, I was basically sabotaging my own research. And I'll tell you briefly how you sabotage your research. If you don't believe that what they're doing is real, it won't happen for you. So I was doing this research as part of my study of the afterlife, and over, I would have even very famous, sometimes very expensive mediums come up almost empty. Then I realized the problem was my own skepticism. I found it hard to believe that this mental talking with the dead really could happen at all. So you've got first to tamp down your own. It's reasonable to be open-mindedly doubtful, but if you're thinking, nah, this will never happen, trust me, you've just made it so that it never will happen. But indeed, there are psychic mediums who are in contact with the dead. It's indisputable. There has been so much evidentiary information received, things that nobody in the room knew, things that had to be verified. There's so much going on in the field of researching psychic mediums, you can be certain that they're real. Not all of them, though. There are. It's easy to fake it, and if you're gullible, you can be faked. So, which is why I recommend that you only go to mediums that you've either had friends who were successful with, or perhaps mediums who have been studied. If you go to winbridgeinstitute.org, I believe is the website. The Winbridge Institute in Tucson, Arizona, is one of the places where psychic mediums are studied, and if they are verified to be actually psychic mediums who can contact the dead, they give information about who they are. You don't need to be you probably shouldn't be in the same place as your psychic medium. It seems to be easier for them. Many of them have told me it's easier for them to contact the dead if there's a distance between you and them, and if it's only a phone call, because then they're not distracted by the perhaps cues that you give them unconsciously or by the way you look. It should be just the dead that they're thinking about. And what you do when you talk to one in Australia and you're in the U.S. or something far away, what you do is free their minds to be able to contact directly the person who has died. Since there's no distance objectively where the dead are, that's not a problem. As far away as you possibly can be is fine, or even next door. But it's good to do it not in person. I'm told this by enough of the psychic mediums I've talked with that I believe that's probably the case. If you're skeptical, as I was, about psychic mediums, I recommend strongly Dr. Gary Schwartz's The Afterlife Experiments, which was published, I think, in 2002 or 2003. Gary is one of the very few scientists who is doing research in the afterlife in a laboratory setting. He's extraordinarily good. I'll tell you in a minute the kinds of things he's working on now, and it will blow your mind. But in his earlier research, he was just remarkable. And what he did was double and triple blind studies of psychic mediums. He would have a medium and a sitter chosen the second before the pairing was made. There's a screen between them. There's no information given to either about the other. So it's really totally blind. And then let's see just how good this medium is. Can he do a good reading under those circumstances? No possibility of doing research ahead of time. No possibility of cues, no possibility of anything. Well, yeah, he found that there were some who were more than 90% accurate. That is extraordinary. So after I read Gary's book, I said, you know, there's probably something to this psychic medium stuff. And I urge you to try it. It's often good to wait at least 6 or 8 months, or especially if you're really grieving, wait a year, because one of the sad things about communicating with the dead is that grief is a powerful negative emotion. Grief absolutely can make it impossible for any medium to contact your dead relatives. It can make it impossible even for your dead relatives to contact you directly. It's a real problem. So one of the first responsibilities we all have, I understand how hard it is to lose a loved one, but we've got to convince ourselves that the loved one is fine, life is eternal, we'll see them again soon, and go on with our lives as best we can. I'm not saying get over it, you never will, but I'm saying tamp down the grief so that you're only sad and open-minded. If you do that, then you create a pathway for your dead loved ones to get through to you, and that's so, so important that you do that. So, okay, that's mediums, and that's how most people will contact the dead, will be through a psychic medium. I've had guests who were working in the field of materialization mediums, which is one of the ways that we are going to basically have drummed over the heads of scientists the fact that people survive. There's another way, too, I'll talk about in a minute. But that's another very common thing you can do. You can learn to use a pendulum. Some people are very good with pendulum communication, but you need to be taught to do it, and you need to be sure that you're protecting yourself, because with someone sitting with a pendulum waiting to receive communications can pick up entities that are not necessarily friendly. Something in that ilk is a Ouija board. They make me nervous, but I've been told by Rosemary Ellen Guiley and others who work in this field that Ouija boards are no more dangerous than any other form of individual communication, provided that you understand what you're doing and have given yourself the proper spiritual protections, which is always essential when you're communicating with the dead on your own. Another way that you can do it is through automatic writing, which is like pendulum communication. Some people who are not psychic in other ways are able to do automatic writing pretty easily, and I don't understand why. I don't understand the process, but I've heard from enough people who had no idea they had this ability, who lost someone, sat down with a pencil and a piece of paper, and got all kinds of wonderful communications from their dead loved ones. So that's another thing you can try. So we've talked about pendulums, Ouija boards, automatic writing, just simply opening your mind and heart can sometimes make it very much easier for the dead to come through to you. There have been cases of people who were not psychic before, but ended up becoming quite psychic just because they allowed their dead loved ones to tune into their energy. That was what basically ignited this ability in them. So you have opportunities quite on your own if you don't want to have a medium in the way. Then you have opportunities to explore. If it doesn't happen right away, don't be discouraged. Set aside 10 minutes a day to try it again. Just if you are doing this on your own, I can't emphasize strongly enough how important it is that you give yourself protections. I would consult a psychic if I were you, who and find one who has some experience in how to give people the tools they need to protect themselves spiritually. Most psychics who practice to the public do have this ability. They've learned to do it on their own, and they can share with you what they do. But it tends to amount to, prayer, calling in guides, filling the room with light. There are things that you, and it's spiritual light, by the way, so you don't see it with your eyes. There are things you can do to protect you. If you don't protect yourself well enough, and if you then, just because you want to do it on a lark, try a pendulum, try a Ouija board, try to do automatic writing or some other kind of personal contact, what can go wrong? Well, the worst thing that can go wrong is the dead tell us that someone sitting prepared to communicate with whoever shows up is like a beacon to them. They will hone right in, and there are some very nasty beings wandering the earth without bodies. This is something else we'll talk about in a later podcast. I tend to favor researching the things that I love and try not to think about the things I don't. So it was very late in my research that I was willing to even begin to accept the fact that there are disembodied entities who are bent on harm. But there certainly are. And apparently all of them that are really going to be troublesome to us are people who just didn't complete their transition, usually for purposes of their own. They didn't want to go. They were afraid to go to hell for things they've done in this lifetime, or they were too angry to go, or they were addicted to something. There are a lot of reasons why an individual who is not spiritually elevated is at all might choose not to go, and it seems to be we can make that stupid and short-sighted choice. But once they are out of their bodies and they've chosen to stick around, they are bored out of their minds, as you can possibly imagine, and they'll hone in on you. And once they have a hook into you, it can be hard to get rid of them. So you can protect yourself absolutely against this kind of having a negative entity latch onto you, but you can't begin to try to communicate on your own until you've learned how to protect yourself. So what are some of the other things you can do if you want to communicate on your own with your dead loved ones? Well, another thing that you can do is learn to do induced communications. This is a relatively recent method, and there are two ways you can do induced communications. If you're deep in grief, there are therapists who can do this. There is at least one therapist, Rochelle Wright, who's in Washington, who has developed a very good method of doing induced communications. And if you just find Rochelle Wright on the internet, I don't remember the name of her website, but you can go to her website, and there you'll find listed therapists all over the country and starting to be all over the world that she has trained to do what she can do. Or if you're in the Seattle, larger, greater Seattle area, that's where she practices. You can go to Rochelle on your own. What she does is to take someone who is in very deep grief. I've talked to people who have gone through her process, but they tell me, I don't believe, it's so incredible, but the proof is in the pudding. They've just lost a child or lost a loved one, lost a husband. They're desperately grieving. They go to Rochelle and spend a day with her. She takes them through a process which allows them to have in-person physical meetings with their dead loved ones. These meetings don't happen in this plane of reality. They happen in the plane where the dead are, although not in the place where the dead go. And these meetings so alleviate people's grief that one woman who said her grief on a 10 scale was a 12. She had lost a daughter. She was just heartbroken. And she said within a day it went to about a 2. And now what's more amazing is she's learned how to make these contacts on her own. Anytime she grieves too much for her daughter, she can have a physical meeting with hugs and conversation and walking with toes in the sand. I don't believe it. I know you don't believe it. But apparently it's happening enough that it's one thing that if you're deeply grieving, you ought to consider is getting this kind of therapy, because it seems to be one of the only ways you can quickly reduce your grief at the loss of someone very close to you. If you're sort of an experimenter and you just want to learn to do this kind of communication on your own, another thing that you can do is to go to R. Craig Hogan's website, which I think is spiritualunderstanding.org. I'm not certain about that, but R. Craig Hogan is his name. He has taken Dr. Wright's therapy, and he has turned it into a process. It's an 8-step process. It's not easy. You've got to really do the process, do the work. But if you do it, you can develop the ability to have those that same kind of experience. Some of those who've gone through Dr. Hogan's process have told me that they get to the point where the person that they love and miss so much is in the room with them physically. Again, I'm not saying this is true because I've not done it myself. I've only talked to people who have been through the process, and I have come to know Dr. Hogan very well and Dr. Wright, and they're people of integrity who just want to help. So all I can say is that there's no harm in trying this stuff. If it interests you, if you think it's going to be important to your own spiritual growth, why not? Why not begin to actually learn how to do these things on your own? Just beware that if you want to do what Dr. Hogan has developed, it won't be especially easy. It does require that you do the work. So what's coming up? Where are we going from here? Beginning in about the late 70s, we began to get good electronic communication going. Now, when we talk about electronic communication, it's important you understand that just as with first discovering how to create apports, take a little white stone from somewhere and make it appear in front of a heartbroken spouse in perhaps the year 100,000 BC, like that, this research is being done by the dead primarily. We have no clue. We're beginning to get a little clue, but not much, of how to bridge what is an extraordinary energy divide between where the dead are and where we are. How do we do it? The dead are working on it. If I told you some of the names, it would blow your mind. People who were very famous during their lives. One of them is Thomas Edison. Everybody knows he's still working on it now, but there are others. Some of them not even in this field during their lifetimes, who have lent their prestige after death and their efforts to trying to make this all happen. So beginning in the late 70s, as we developed more and more electronic abilities, and frankly as computers got better, we started to get real efforts made by the dead to make their presence known electronically. There was so much good information received electronically in the 80s that if mainstream science had not already been dogmatic materialist and refusing to look at anything that wasn't dogmatically atheist materialist, if mainstream science had had a speck of an open mind, you would have been living since the mid-80s knowing that your life and your mind are eternal. Unfortunately, they stonewalled it all. But back then, we had what amounted to the Wright brothers' flight in the area of electronic communication with the dead, using phones, using computers, using little black box things, one of which, amazingly, was designed after his death by Edison and apparently works. There was a heyday, which was really the 80s and into the 90s, of this work. And because the dead They seem to be unwilling to continue to do something not productive. They seem to have withdrawn sometime in the mid to late 90s. Fewer and fewer of the dead were still working with the living on electronic communication. That's too bad. It's unfortunate because, as I say, they were making really, really good progress. But what's happened in the early part of the 21st century is that we're starting to get the dead working on this again and much more productively. The most productive kind of communication method seems to be computers or computer-assisted electronic methods. There isn't time today to talk about all the things that they're doing, but I'm soon going to have some guests on who are actually working in this field, who will give us more concrete information about how it works. But just be aware that there are people now having real-time conversations with the dead. "Hi, Mom, how you doing?" kind of conversations with the dead. And when that becomes broadly known and easily replicable, And as we know, we didn't get commercial flight the day after the Wright brothers proved it was possible. It took a while, and it's taking a while now for researchers who have no funding. With funding, they tell us it could happen a lot sooner. The problem is, though, that the dead don't live, there's no money where the dead are, and they quickly forget how important it is on this scale. So some of the researchers have told me that the problem is the dead want them to build what amounts to the Great Hadron Collider in terms of complexity and cost, and they don't have any money. So they have to say, you know, scale it back, let's do something simpler. And they're acting as the lab assistants to these very eminent dead scholars and researchers. And the senior researchers in this, the dead, do comply and have come up with simpler ways to do some of the things they're trying to do. But it's going on right now. It's already happening. So all we have to do is look forward a year or two, and these are the things we're like a year or two, pardon, a decade or two, and these are the things we're likely to see. We're probably going to see texting. You'll be able to use what amounts to laser light to text with your dead loved one. So you yourself, without any medium in the way, will be texting with your great-grandmother or whoever and talking. I mean, people who text all day long, and more of us do that, will be able to do it with people who aren't in the room, as they say. The Holy Grail, though, is going to be the soul phone, and that seems to be maybe 20 or 30 years away. Maybe could be sooner. I don't know when the breakthrough will happen. This research is moving quickly, but it's an almost insuperably difficult task to have real-time telephone communications, although it does happen now. I'm watching. They're trying to come up with ways to make it so it just happens the way telephone communication happens now. But this is very, very exciting, don't you think? I mean, this is the century when it will be impossible any longer for anyone to deny that the dead survive, and they survive in joyous union with us. This is all a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time to be alive. And that's all I have time to tell you today. As I say, I'm going to have guests on who will talk more about communication in the future. If you're curious about this area, my book is The Fun of Staying in Touch, How Our Loved Ones Contact Us and How We Can Contact Them. It's just out in the fall, and you can get it on Amazon. As you know, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I always say something, and I say it every week because it's so important that you internalize this. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, and you never will end. And when you fully grasp what that really means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things that we're learning about the dead, from the dead, that we're learning in this field and learning about our great reality, you should know that we have about a year and a half of archives on iTunes. Just look for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I've had some of these investigators and scholars in the field of communication as guests, and I hear from people still who are listening to things that were recorded a year ago with people like Dr. Gary Schwartz and Dr. Hogan and Dr. Wright. Just to remind you, The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch are available now. In a couple of years' time, we'll be putting out The Fun of Growing Forever, which is going to be about how we develop spiritually, what life is really all about. I'm hearing from people already who are saying that that's the book they're waiting for, so we've got to get to it. Our guest next week will be Miles Allen. Miles is another afterlife researcher who has quietly spent his life putting things together. And he has a new book out called Astral Intimacy, which answers that age-old question, is there sex after death? You cannot miss next week. So our guest this week has been your host. I'm an attorney by profession. I deal with facts. I've spent my life using my investigative skills to try to understand what happens at death and after death. There turns out to be more information, and it's more consistent than you can possibly imagine. It is thrilling to do this work. Look at all the fun we're having here. And you and I can do this together. Until scientists start start actually doing science in this field, and it's going to take them a while longer to get a clue, you and I can have the fun ourselves of making what are the big, life-changing, major discoveries that are soon going to rock the world. You and I can do this work. The scientists will just be following up and documenting. Isn't that exciting to contemplate? So welcome into the fun of figuring it all out. For now, though, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, always knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.